And thanks again to everybody else that's read and helped us open the meeting. And I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Particular welcome to any visitors and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us this evening. And we hope you're going to hear some. And we encourage you to keep coming back. So, like I said, we are a speaker meeting, and I'm going to introduce our speaker this evening. He's very kindly agreed it and put quite short notice to come along and share with us this evening. This individual's been coming to our meeting for a little while, and our Antipodean friends, she frequents those meetings too, and I always enjoy what she has to share. I'm really looking forward to hearing her share her experience, strength and hope, journey to, through and in Narcotics Anonymous, 40 or 45 minutes. So without any further ado, Dawn, welcome, and please share your experience, strength and hope with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. My name is Dawn, and I am wonderful today, and I am definitely an addict.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Hello, everyone. So, I just celebrated an anniversary on Tuesday, and it's kind of interesting. Yeah, 14 years, and I remember when I first got clean, a friend of mine in my support group who had like 7 years at the time was like, I can't wait until I get 14 years clean. And I was like, really? Why is that? And he said, because it'll be XIV. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So anyway, a little story here. When I went to get my coin on Tuesday at my home group, the literature chair had given us the wrong coin, so I couldn't get my coin. He gave us a 16-year coin. It was an XVI, so I couldn't get my coin because I was so looking forward to getting my XIV coin. So anyway, so how did I get here? I did not start using when I was young. I did not start using to fit in. I was always a very sociable person. I didn't need to do drugs or to drink to fit in. I was able to talk to people, and I was able to dance with boys, and I was able to hang out with all the different crowds, and I was able to do all of those things on my own. So, you know, I was not the kind of person that started using as a teenager. I didn't start using when I was younger than that. When I was young, like 7 years old, my older sister, a little bit about her story, just a little bit. She was using. She's 7 years older than I am. And so she would have been like 14, freshman in high school, and doing lines of coke in the bathroom. She had started huffing gasoline when she was like 10 in the garage. You know, so she was, you know, shoplifting, having sex, you know, being a rebel against authority, you know, getting arrested, you know, just all the bad kid stuff. So we ended up in family counseling, and my older brother was becoming more introverted. My parents were, screaming all the time. And my sister had to go live at juvenile home. And, I saw what, using was doing to the family. And I said, I will never do this. I will never be that person. I will never, do this to my family. And, so I took kind of like a little vow that I was going to, stay clean, stay straight edge, And, somewhere though, around that age, 13, 14, 15, that weird sort of, impending feeling of doom sort of hit me though, that something's not quite right. And something was never quite right, my whole life. I never really felt like I fit in. I always felt different than everyone. I always had that weird anxiety in the back of my head. Like if my parents were 20 minutes late, I was like, oh my God, they got in a car accident and they died somewhere. Just always had this racing anxiety, and I just never felt like I was 100% part of any group. Now I could go be with any group and be a part of any group, but never felt like I was 100% there with them. So I fit in everywhere, but never really fit in anywhere. I learned at a very young age how to wear a great mask. And it wasn't a mask of how to fit in. It was a mask of how to pretend like everything's okay. And I did this from a very young age. When my parents were screaming at each other, and I would sit up in my bedroom closet, crying, and everything's okay. And when I would worry and have anxiety, and then everything would be like, all right, none of that crazy shit happened. Everything's okay. And then I'm a teenager and I'm feeling like I'm dying inside. And guess what? Here's my mask. Everything's okay. This was my mask to the world. Everything's okay. I'm crazy in my head. I am effing crazy in my head. There is a whirlpool of black hole. And I am tap dancing to keep from tap dancing at supersonic speed to keep from falling into it. But here's my mask. Everything's okay. How you doing, Dawn? Everything's great. Everything's great. Because I had to be there for everyone, for everything, and the world didn't have time for my problems. Everything's okay. So throughout my teenage years, I didn't use, but I shoplifted a lot. I was really good at it too. And I had a lot of sex and, different outlets of addiction. And so I had a child when I was 18, consequently. I ended up putting myself through beauty school and I did hair. So through my 20s, I was a single mother, and my son has he's 30 now. He was well, he wasn't diagnosed until he was 7, but he has had childhood onset schizophrenia and Asperger's. And it wasn't even called Asperger's back then. And then it was called Asperger's, and now it's not called Asperger's anymore. But he was very difficult. He's always been difficult. He's still a really interesting bird. He is just a crazy man. He's just a lot to handle, but I love him so much. He still lives with me. So, he was a lot to handle. And, I had responsibility and I had to go to work. I had to take care of my son. Now, all through high school, all my friends were the burnouts and the junkies and the drug addicts. All my friends went to rehab. And it was kind of like this popular thing in like the 80s where all the middle class kids went to rehab. And, all my friends went to rehab. And, that was just how it was. And, in my 20s, I still had the same type of friends. All my friends were all drug users and pot smokers and drug users and pill poppers and alcoholics and all my friends were. But I was like, the clean one, the one they called the sober one, I was the designated driver. I was the one who they called the bus driver, when they all went tripping, I was the one who had to babysit everybody. So, I was the quote end quote responsible one of all of my friends. And but I would still, have all the parties at my house, and everyone would go down to the basement and get all fucked up in my basement and then come back upstairs at my parties. And but all my friends were just, the addicts, because that's who I got along with. And I was too poor to do drugs. I mean, for real. I struggled through my 20s, through my early 20s. And I was a single mom, and I worked really hard to make ends meet and to put myself through school and to pay off school and just to take care of my son and to get him the help he needed. And I didn't even start drinking until I was like 21. And like people were like, "Hey, Dawn, you want a joint?" And I would like take a couple puffs off of it and like, "I'm ready to go to bed. You guys need to go home." It was like, partying in quotes, partying just really didn't appeal to me. It wasn't something that was there, but somewhere in the back of my mind, I kind of knew that like I was an addict. I was this, it was gonna happen for me someday. Like, I know this is gonna sound crazy, but maybe one day when I get my life together, then I'll go be a junkie. Sounds so crazy, but it's like, but it was like there somewhere in the back of my mind. I don't know how that is, but it's just crazy. So, anyway, I go on through my 20s and I get this great job, and I have a career, and I buy a house, and I have two cars, and I have my son, and I am a shopaholic, and I spend so much money. Oh my God, I'm just spending money like right and left and left and right, and just blowing money on everything. And making very poor financial decisions. And, just through a whole slew of circumstances, I end up having to file bankruptcy. And I lost my one job, and I had a teaching position with an international hair color company, and it was a really good job. And it wasn't any fault of my own. The company downsized, and they cut like 8 of us out of 12 in our area. They just took like the top 8 people as far as like who got paid the most, and were like, nope, you're all not getting your contracts renewed. And it was like, well, and that was like the bulk of my income. I was still working in a salon, but like 3/4 of my income was my teaching job. And I was, I just filed bankruptcy. Now I'm losing my teaching job. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell. So I have my friend who, all my friends are the drug addicts. So I come home from bankruptcy court and I say to my friend, I go, hey, why don't you go buy me a bundle? And he looks at me and he's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. And he's just like, well, okay then. I'm like 30 years old. I jump into this fucking drug addict thing into the deep end, feet first, wearing concrete b boots. Like, what the fuck? But I knew what I was doing. I don't know. I just was like making this decision on my own, no peer pressure, no, gateway drug. I just was like, yep, gonna do it. Life is fucked up enough already. Just gonna go do this. And the thing is, I had pretended like everything was okay for so long, and I was so fucking exhausted of pretending like everything was okay for so long, and I had done everything for everybody else for so long, and I was like, you know what? This is the first goddamn thing I'm gonna do for myself. So fuck you, fuck the world. I'm gonna go get high. And I did. And then I ended up like 6 months later with a back injury and got prescribed a prescription, and I didn't have health insurance, and it was cheaper to go get drugs off the street than it was to fill my prescription. So that kind of started me into more of a regular using. Because 6 months earlier, when I had gotten stuff, I was like, used it, held on to it, like maybe once a month used it, whatever. But this was more like the start of the doing it regularly, once a week, twice a week, every other day, every day. There you are. You're a fucking addict. And I remember the first time that I used, because I got in a fight with my boyfriend, because it pissed me off. And I was crying. I said, I don't want to feel this way anymore. I didn't use because I was like, hey, let's feel good, or hey, let's party, or hey, I just want to use. I used because I don't want to feel this way anymore. And I remember saying, this is a line that once I cross, I can't uncross this. And I remember sitting in the chair saying, holy shit. This is monumental. This is something big. So, I went on, and I can remember using, and I can remember at one point using and saying to myself, holy shit, I'm going to have to do this every day for the rest of my life. And you know what? I'm okay with that. And this moment is like burnt in my memory. I mean, I can remember where I was sitting. I can remember like I was sitting in front of a mirror. I can remember like what was reflecting from behind me. It's burnt into my memory. I'm gonna have to use every day for the rest of my life, and I'm okay with that. So I went within about 3.5 months from using every day to being a dealer with about $1,000 a day habit. And I tried to, like, I called called the methadone clinic. And I said, I need help. And they said, we can't help you. You haven't, you don't have a long enough history. You need to go to detox. I do it $1,000 a day. I don't think I can just detox off of that. I need to be like weaned down or something. I said, won't you even talk to me? And they're like, no, we won't even talk to you. Sorry. I mean, that's how long ago this was because today they'll throw drug replacement at anybody. You know, they're happy to do that shit. You know, I mean, that's how it is today. But back then, nope. Wouldn't even talk to me. You know, it's like 4 months into this. I remember crying because I wanted to be free so bad. And they wouldn't even see me. And I can remember just crying, saying, I'm stuck. I'm stuck in this. I'm stuck. So years go by. And I'm introduced to a different drug. And I'm like, woohoo! I can do this drug instead of that drug. That's called substitution, boys and girls. And I don't have to do this drug every day. I just do this drug when I want to do it instead of because I have to do it. Whoa, what a concept! This is awesome. Unfortunately, it's a drug that I want to do all the time. Oh my God. Oh, well, like 2 weeks later, I get arrested because it is like the downfall. It is like the decline and fall of dawn. Oh my God. It is just bad. I mean, Bad. It'll turn your grandma into a freaking street walking hooker in like 6 weeks. It was bad. And I get arrested and I'm sentenced to rehab, and it takes me like 6 months to get in because that's how it was back then. And during which time I'm just total freaking mess. I'm homeless. My son is staying at my mom's house. I'm doing like couch tour 2006. Just like staying at different people's places, staying in trap houses, staying in crack houses, staying in like getting scabies off of people's couches. I mean, just, the glamorous life. And finally get into rehab. And I'm there for like, I don't know, a week, and I haven't slept. And they put me on some kind of like medicine that's supposed to like help me sleep, and I totally like have a psychotic break on it, and I'm like hallucinating. So they send me to the psych ward for a week, and I'm all cool there. I'm like, well, this is a nice place, So then rehab comes and gets me and brings me back to rehab, and I'm like, I don't like it here. There's 40 women and in a tiny little house, and I don't think I can deal with this. And they're like, well, then you're gonna have to leave. I go, well, then I'm gonna have to leave. Well, if you leave, you can't get clean. I go, well, you just told me if I can't stay, I have to leave. And then you told me if I leave, I can't get clean. Well, you can't get clean if you don't stay. And then I looked at them and I said, well, I thought that the rehab success rate was 3% after a year. And they're, oh, well, we have a higher percent than that. I go, I think I'll do this on my own. Well, you won't stay clean, they said to me. And I look down at this picture, and it's this picture of me and my mom. And I'm like 4 years old in this picture. And so it's like mid-70s. And my mom's got her like white lady afro going. And it's this picture I had held on to when I was doing my couch tour. I had it inside like a journal. And so I had it when I was in rehab, and I pull it out of my journal and I'm looking at this picture. And in the picture, my dad had taken the picture. I'm looking at the camera and I'm like 4 years old, and like 4-year-old kids, they look and they've got like these big, huge eyes, like a deer in headlights, like, ooh, these big, huge eyes. And I look down and I say, hey, Dawn, stay wide-eyed and full of wonder. Be wonderful. And to me, that is how being wonderful started, is to stay full of wonder. I looked at this picture and I thought, as long as I can stay like that child and look at life like through the eyes of a child, where everything is new And there's something always to be learned, and every day is a lesson to be explored. And you're like, okay, show me something now, you know, like a little kid and full of wonder. Then you're wonderful because you're full of wonder. And this is all going through my head, clickety click, 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 click. So I'm looking down at this picture and I say, stay wide-eyed and full of wonder, be wonderful. And I just looked up at him and I said, I'm leaving. So I got in the car and I left, and it was 19 days since I had been dropped off. And I went right back to the house that I had been in from the time I had left. And I stayed in a tent that summer to stay clean. I lived in a tent for like 4 months. And then I ended up staying in a house where I lived upstairs from a drug dealer. That was hard. I ended up relapsing at about 9 months clean. My sponsor had relapsed. I was in a bad head place. I had been service had been thrust upon me. I had copped a huge resentment against service. But the long and short of it is, we don't relapse and we don't use for any other reason than because we're addicts. Okay, not because the dog died or, you know, my parents got divorced or I wrecked the car or, you know, I lost my job or I got a job or, you know, whatever. Or it's a day that ends in Y. We use because we are addicts. That's why we use. So I had relapsed, and my little support group knew, and my home group knew. I surrendered all my service positions, stopped claiming clean time, but I didn't announce it. I didn't stand up and claim a white key tag or anything, because I'm like, I'm gonna wait until I can actually get some clean time before I, you know, do this, because I don't want to stand up every 3 days and get a white key tag, because I, you know, I don't want to tile my fucking bathroom with white key tags, okay? So, because you know, there I couldn't get 3 days. You know, the most I could do was like 11. But really, for quite a while, I couldn't do three. And you know, I finally was able to like come to this conclusion when I stopped, where I said, you know what? If I use again, I'm not going to learn anything I haven't already learned. It's not going to show me anything I haven't already seen. It's not going to take me anywhere I haven't already been. Nothing new is going to come of this. And I want to live. I want to grow. I want to evolve and develop. And using is not going to do that for me. It's just going to be the same old, or it's going to be something that I haven't done, which is die. because I've been arrested and I've been to an institution and the only thing left is death. So it's like it's going to be the same or it's going to be death. And I'm like, you know, I'm done. So, you know, so it was June 8th of 2007 was you know, that first day. And you know, those first month or so, the first couple weeks was easy. And then the couple weeks after that was hard. I'm calling my friend, you know, who lives downstairs, like, so you got anything? And he's like, I got nothing for you. Because he's a good friend of mine, even though he's a drug dealer. He's a really good friend of mine. And he's like, I got nothing for you. Click. He's still a good friend of mine, and he's still a drug dealer. We've been friends since we were 15. I told you all my friends are drug addicts. So anyway, but he has been the most supportive person for me in my recovery. He really has been. He's so supportive of me. He really is so supportive of me. So, anyway, yeah. So when I first got clean, I had a sponsor who died when I had a year clean. And I felt like my arms and my legs had been cut off. I was devastated. Not when I first got clean, when I eventually got clean. Let me rephrase that. I was just lost. I felt like my compass was broken. And but later, several years later, there was a man who sponsored a group of young men who passed away, and I was able to basically say to this group of young men, like, look, I know you feel like your arms and your legs have been cut off and that you have no compass, but you will get through this, you know. And they were like, oh my God, that's exactly what I feel like. And I'm like, I know, I've been there. So, you know, when we go through, you know, the tribulations and the trials and the heartache, we are there when the next person goes through it to say, I got through it and I stayed clean. And you can too. And not even like this is what I did, just that you can too, you know, just to give someone the hope. So I ended up with kind of a de facto sponsor, and we had already, at that point, me and this person started work on a newcomer meeting, which did step one, step two, step three, like each week, and then relapse, like week one, two, three, four, and about 6 months after that, we had kind of gotten together and decided to try and work this into a this newcomer meeting, work it into a 12 step meeting, but to try and do it in one day. Obviously, you can't do it in an hour. So, we were talking about doing it like in 6 hours, in chunks, and doing it like as an experience, or some people would call it a workshop or whatever. So the two of us got together and, he pulled quotes from, the NA literature, and I typed it up, and we put together this meeting, and and this workshop or whatever, and it's still going on to this day. And when we first started, we did this workshop twice a month for 2 years, and it was we went through a 12-step experience all in one day, and it was pretty cool because we do a little mini fourth step in there where you just put like two or three people on it, and then you're supposed to like later get with your sponsor and continue and do a more thorough fourth step afterwards. And since this person was my sponsor, we would do it. Or, since we did it every other week, we just, continue with it. I put my mother on this thing every other week for 18 months. 36 fourth steps before my mother was not on there. My mother was a crazy woman. She was bipolar. She was diagnosed very late in life, did not take medication. She was the kindest woman you would ever meet. She was the nastiest woman you would ever meet. Give you the shirt off her back, but she would also be so vindictive that she would go out of her way, possibly even inconvenience and hurt herself just to vindictively get even with you. So, So in recovery, at the end of the meetings, when we get around and we do our little circle, we circle up and we pray. I would pray for my mom, and I would just think of a picture of her, and I would just envision her. We'd say the still sick and suffering addict, and she was an addict in every sense of the word, except that she didn't do drugs, but she was every other sense of the word an addict. But I would just envision her, and I would say, before she dies, may she just know a moment of serenity. And I prayed for her for years and years and years and years and years. And I would say, bless her, change me. Bless her, change me. Because when we have people in our lives who we hold resentments against, we need to pray for them, but we need to pray for ourselves so that we can let go of the resentment. So we say, bless them, change me. And before my mother died, I had 3 amazing months with her. Just beautiful months with her. Absolutely beautiful, amazing months with her. And when I first got clean, that woman told me, I liked you better when you were high. She stole my money. She changed the locks in her house. After I got clean, she tried to take custody of my son away after I got clean. Okay, I mean, she was not a really nice person. But we had beautiful time together before she died because I prayed for her. Bless her. Change me. I have gained from the steps an ability to face life on NA's terms. People talk about facing life on life's terms. I can face life on NA's terms. I can own my shit. When I do something, I can own it. I did that. Yes, that thing, I did that. I don't even think twice about owning my stuff. Not at all. I am a person who is capable of being of purpose. And it doesn't matter if I don't have a job. I mean, I am a student today. I enrolled myself in school, 48 years old, decided to go back to college, back to university. But I am capable of being of purpose, of service. I admit my faults today. I'm honest. I'm probably too honest. I'm try my best to not be brutally honest unless it's someone who I know can handle it. And I carry the message today. I carry the message to everyone today, to people who aren't even in recovery, just to everyone, that there is a new way of life. Recovery has gifted me with the ability to not have to wear a mask. Because everything really is okay today. I'm not dying inside. I don't have that impending feeling of doom. I have a relationship with my higher power. I don't have that mask. I'm no longer falling into that vortex because that vortex isn't there. Everything really is wonderful. So I guess that's what I have to share. Yeah, I guess that's it. Thank you. I love you all. And you all are wonderful. Thank you for letting me share.